Our first 10-minute speaker is Eddie.
Hi, my name is Eddie. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is January 7th, 07. My sponsor is Mike C. My sober brothers are Leaf, Adam, Matt, Princeton. And I have to shout out to my fellow greeters and cake associates. And I'm kind of overwhelmed, not by the amount of people, but just that I was asked to speak. You know, I always look at people up here, it's like the Academy Awards, I thank this one, I thank that one. And I feel like Sally Field, I just feel like crying. And saying, well, I can't believe you people like me. For that, I'm truly grateful. It's a miracle that I'm alive, and here, and they're holding. And the people coming into the rooms, new people, you're in such a protective, welcoming place. I didn't walk into the rooms. I washed up like driftwood. And I said that because I'm from Rockaway. And actually, I don't know why the last word of my story wasn't shipwreck. Actually, I do know why. It was because of the service to the Atlantic Club. But I'm 45 years old. I was born in Queens to a typically dysfunctional family. My father was a raging alcoholic and angaholic. There wasn't a lot of emotional freedom in my house. There was a lot of corporal punishment. There was no open discussion of ideas or I don't think that's a good idea or could we do this? No. It wasn't a very protective environment. And, you know, they did the best they could. There's no blame involved. But, and I was kind of, I was a quiet kid. I liked playing with my G.I. Joes and my Lincoln Logs. I didn't want to fall. I just liked being by myself. And then kindergarten happened. And that didn't fit into my plans. And someone said, that's when I needed my first drink, was my first day of kindergarten. But I didn't know about drinking yet, so I was very hypersensitive, very uncomfortable to the nth degree, full of fear, being out of phase with everyone else, being in an aquarium looking out at everyone else. And if you teased me, I would bite you, or I would just isolate. And when I got older, I learned how to punch people and isolate. And then when I got even older than that, I learned how to drink. That's how I medicated. I isolated, I bit people, or I would drink. And then I put them all together. And, I'm not going to just say it. Life was always bad. I had some really great times. I was very fortunate and privileged. I didn't want for anything. But I just wasn't comfortable. I had to be high every single day, every single minute. I just had to be high. It was my image. Jim Morrison was my idol. Just drink. Flask. Someone said, you know, you careful, man. You want to be an alcoholic. I said, I am an alcoholic. I'm a burnout. That was my rough, tough image. If you wanted, if the guys I hung out with, if you wanted to discuss emotions, you were not part of my plan either. You could just drink and talk superficial stuff. And that's how it was. I was just very uncomfortable in my own skin. Eventually I realized the alcohol and other things weren't for me. And I stopped. I did a geographical and I moved to Florida and I came back. It worked for a long time. No rooms, no anything. I don't remember any white knuckles. I had resentments. I wasn't a spiritual person particularly. And I was a little bit more emotionally healthy. Or I faked it, I think. And I got married. I had four beautiful children. And then I started drinking again. Exactly what happened was at 9/11, I'm a construction worker with a lot of skills, and there were some opportunities. I went down there in the rescue recovery, and it was hell on earth. It was everything from A to Z. Arsenic, benzene, cadmium, all the way to zinc. And the biological hazards, and there were body bags and red bags. If you stood too long in one place, my boots would melt and hit the ground. And I started drinking really heavily. I started doing everything really heavily. In 2003, I wound up in a psych ward. And that became a recurring thing. Relapse. 2003, 2006. And it was my powerlessness over alcohol. I knew when my wife told me, if you keep doing this, you're not going to see me or the kids. That didn't stop me from drinking. When my employer of 18 years told me, you either quit drinking or you're out of a job. That didn't stop me from drinking. I was just powerlessness. And, it says, for some insane reason, I knew what was going to happen. I still kept doing it. And in these rooms of psych wards, I went to Postgraduate Center for Mental Health. It was a micro program, mentally ill, chemically addicted, drunks are allowed. And the Atlanta group came every single week. And you know who you are. There's too many people to start naming it. Every single week, the Atlanta group came with the message. And every single week, I fought them off. And they were like the Marines coming out of the boats. And I just wanted to, just like the big book, self-knowledge, I wanted to figure out the inner workings of my mind, and if I do that, this will never happen to me again. And I was powerless over alcohol, and it happened to me again. And I lost so much because of my powerlessness and because I wasn't open-minded to what's in these rooms. You know, if you're new in these rooms, give it a chance. You know, I think about my insanity, all the nitwits I gave my phone number to, all the things and things I did, the places I went. If you're new, just get a sponsor and give her your phone number and call them every day. What could possibly happen compared to what possibly has already happened? That's what it was me. When I had nowhere else to go, Maxi, who came every week doing service to this mental institution, I just said, help me. I can't do this on my own. I knew that the higher power, this power was not inside me. The power was somewhere else. It was in my sponsor, it was in the rooms, it was in my... And slowly, I started asking questions. And every time, I was so afraid of the answer, it was going to be a deal breaker. You know, what is spirituality? Because these words kept me out of the room. Spirituality, God, prayer. And when I found out that they weren't that scary and they were pretty simple, I just kept going with the help of the people in the rooms, the help of my sponsor and other people. I found out that spirituality is acceptance. Acceptance is the answer to all my problems. And faith is just doing the next right thing and just leaving the rest up to everything else that I can't control. This huge universe of God, a higher power. And it's my thinking and my lack of an open mind that kept me out of these rooms for so long. Just give it a chance. And you have a chance. Like, I'm not supposed to be here. If you add up all the X's and Y's and derivatives, it adds up to death. But I'm here. There's something happening. I don't know what it is, but something's happening in my life. By working the steps, I'm thinking differently. I have a disease of perception. It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart. He had a disease of perception. Look where it almost took him. His life was his life. And my thinking has definitely changed, and my symptoms of drinking have stopped. I don't have this compulsion to drink. Because the spiritual principles of the steps. And just get a sponsor if you're here for the first time or you're new. Just get a phone number and start calling it. And trust a little bit. It's not a leap of faith. It's just a little step. Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Julianne.
Good evening. My name is Julian. I'm an alcoholic. My sober date is February 10th, 2001. My sponsor's name is Cynthia, and I'm a new member of the Atlantic Group. Thank you. My sponsor called me this morning and wished me a happy and healthy new year, and she said that when we have our health, anything is possible. And I know that when I have my spiritual health, anything's possible. I can't believe I'm up here. I mean, I'm so grateful to the Atlantic Group, and I'm so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous that I haven't found it necessary to pick up a drink or a drug in almost 7 years. Because I came into these rooms, I was so broken. I was spiritually, mentally, and physically broken. I still suffer from some of the physical effects of my drinking and my other addictions that brought me to these rooms. I have terrible teeth. I feel fine now. Mentally and spiritually, my life has gotten so much better because I've learned that I'm not God. I've learned I have a higher power. I've learned to ask other people for help. And I've learned that anything's possible, especially change. When I came into these rooms, I had my second visit to rehab, and the rehab that I was in brought in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had been coming to AA for about a year and a half, and I knew that I needed to find a sponsor. Each meeting I went to, I would ask a woman to be my sponsor. I'd call her up that night. I would be drinking or doing whatever else I was doing. And I would call the sponsor, I would tell her, and she would say, just stop what you're doing, flush it. And I would pretend to flush it, and I wouldn't. And I would then go to a different AA meeting so I wouldn't have to run into her again. And when I finally succumbed to going to rehab because I couldn't do this, I couldn't get sober, the rehab that I was in reported me to the Department of Children's Services because I had two small children at home that I was not taking care of. And I remember how deluded I was that I pled my case to the social worker saying, you know, my children are fed and they're bathed and they go to school each day and their homework's done and I take care of them. And the social worker asked me if I would leave my children with a babysitter if I knew that the babysitter was drunk. And I said, absolutely not. And he said, well, then what are you doing? So I went to the rehab. They sent me to a halfway house in Florida where I stayed for 5 months. And I left my children with their still active father, who was now my ex-husband. And I went and I focused on myself because I was told, as I went kicking and screaming down to Florida, I was told that when you're on an airplane and they are teaching you how to use the oxygen mask, that they tell the mothers that they're supposed to put the oxygen mask on themselves and then put it on their child. And something clicked inside me and I took care of myself because I really wasn't taking good care of my kids. So I went to Florida and I stayed in this halfway house for 5 months. And we used to go to meetings. We used to call it the druggy buggy. It would take us to AA meetings and around where we were in Florida. And it was a very strict halfway house. We had a man ban, which is something I think was very good for the young women, myself included. And we were told that we had to make 90 meetings in 90 days, and I did that. And I came to visit my children and my ex-husband when I was about three or four months sober. And I stayed here for the weekend, and then I went back to Florida for another month and a half. And my ex-husband saw that I had changed, and so he followed me into the rooms of AA, and he also got sober. So we both got sober in 2001. We never got back together, which is part of God's plan, fortunately. But so in my first 5 years of sobriety, my first 5 years of sobriety, I went to a lot of meetings. I went to probably almost a meeting every day. I had a sponsor. I had two sponsees. I worked the steps. And I made phone calls to newcomers very sporadically. And I stayed sober. And I loved AA and I loved being sober. But something happened about a year ago that changed the tone of my sobriety. And what happened to me was I felt that the obsession to drink and had been lifted. But what happened was I had surgery. And I was prescribed medication for the pain of the knee surgery. And I noticed that I was very attracted to the way the medication made me feel in a scary fashion. And I shared about it with my sponsor, but it frightened me very much because it reminded me that, you know, this program, I felt that I was taking my program for granted. So what I did was I started coming, I was seeing somebody who was had joined the Atlanta group, and I started to see him change, and I started to realize that something needed to change in my program, because while I was sober, I didn't feel that I had a conscious contact with my higher power, because that almost relapse frightened me so much. So what I've learned and what I've changed in my program in the past year, and I owe a tremendous amount of it to the Atlanta group, is that I learned to pray, because prayer changes everything. And I learned that I don't have to do this alone, because I was often trying to run my own show, which meant that I was trying to play God, just not a position for a willful person like myself to be in. And I learned that the Atlanta group is a great place to get sober and to meet newcomers. Because for me, when I'm reaching out to a newcomer, I'm not in my own head. And there's no place that I want to be less frequently than inside my own head. I know that when I reach out and give away my recovery to somebody else and to help somebody else, that it helps me and it comes back to me tenfold. There's nothing that feels better to me. Because when I was out there, I drove with my children when I was drunk. I left them alone, waving to the doorman as I went out at 3:00 in the morning to meet up with my dealer. You know, I was a selfish, self-centered person. And I still have some of those traits inside me, but for me, the best way to not be that selfish, self-centered person is to reach out and help somebody else. And coming to the Atlanta group, and also just coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm afforded the privilege of meeting newcomers and people who need help all the time. I mean, for me, that's the best part about being sober. That's the part that reminds me that I can change. It's like my sponsor said, that's the part of having spiritual health that I so wanted, and I thought I had. I thought that in the earlier parts of my recovery, I thought, I'm not drinking. Yay, I'm different. I'm different than who I was. But I don't feel now as I felt then. I feel now that I have a chance to help somebody else and to continue to help somebody else with their recovery. So, I still have 1 minute left, but I think I'm done. Thank you.
And our main speaker tonight is Mike Hess.
How you doing, Mike? An alcoholic. You know, a couple of people asked me if I was nervous, and I said, yeah, I'm nervous. I really am. But, you know, I do it anyway. You know, I just want to say that people raise their hand and grab somebody with that glow in their eye and ask them to help you through this stuff, because my life is different today because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I say nothing tonight, I'm in a suit, and that says a lot, man. It really does. It really does. And because the bottom line is, I would do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I stop and think, but I do. I show up when I'm asked, and that's not the person that I was when I came in here. I'll let you know a little about me. I grew up in Queens, one of nine kids. My father was a New York City cop, and I was the youngest boy. That's another thing. I've never spoken to a microphone before, so you gotta stand with me. You know, I'm doing a lot of things for the first time tonight. I really am. You know, my buddy, I was talking to him, I asked him, how do I buy a suit? I really didn't know how to. I went and I bought a suit for this occasion, and he said, Mike, go in there. And he said, I'm not afraid to ask questions today. He said to me, Mike, go in there. When you go in there, pull the pockets out. I said, what the heck do you pull the pockets out? He said, I don't know, but it looks like you know what you're doing. And I did that. I didn't know what the heck I was doing, but I came out with a nice suit, though. And, you know, he said to me, he says, Mike, since you're all dressed up, I'll come pick you up in my BMW. And I've never driven in a BMW. And so he picked me up in a BMW, got one of them things that tell you exactly where you're going. And it's wild, man. These are all the benefits of AA, you know. It's amazing. Now back to where I came from. I grew up in Queens, one of nine, youngest boy, and my father, like I said, was a city cop. And you know, as a young kid, my head wasn't right. You know, I always knew my heart was good, but my head was just not there. And I was the type of kid, my mom would be running after the other kids, and she'd say, just stand here, don't move. Next thing I'd be bending down, picking up a rock and throwing it out a window or something. I just was not right, and I really wasn't. I always never thought I'd fit in. You know, my brothers were real athletes, and at about 11 years old, I felt a solution. You know, I always had a lot of noise in my head. You know, not fitting in, unworthy, all that stuff, and at about 11, I found alcohol, and it worked. It was a solution, and I ran with that solution for a long, long time, and it took me places that I'm not proud of. It made me do things I'm not proud of. My father was one of the finest men I've ever met in my life. But growing up with a cop, just I was on a different side of the law. You know, you mix alcohol and me, and I usually get locked up. And the thing was, he was usually right there to help me out of it. You know, he'd show up in the courtrooms in Queens and know everybody in the courtroom. And I just the whole game to me. You know, it was all part of the alcohol game. And no, nothing mattered when I picked up alcohol. And like I said, it took me to places. I mean, I come from a real good family. My mom was one of the sweetest, most spiritual people you'd ever want to meet. And on one of my last runs, I went over there to borrow some money. And she looked me dead in the eye and she said, Mike, why don't you take your own life? Because you're killing me and your father real slow. And I said, whoa, man, that's a cold woman. And I wasn't ready to give up alcohol. So I just stayed away from mom for quite a while. And you know, one of my last runs out there, a guy put a gun to my head and asked me, give me all your money. And I looked him dead in the eye and I said, do me a favor, pull that trigger. And he looked at me and he thought I was nuts. He took off. You know, that's where alcohol had taken me. You know, they talk about unmanageable. Well, my life was unbearable. I hated waking up every morning. They talk about a God. I used to pray every day to die. Please, God, please, just let me not wake up, man. Let me not wake up. And you know, I was blessed with it. I went into this place called Veritas Villa. And up there I got an education. And it's the first time I ever heard of this thing called the disease concept. You know, I always thought I was just evil. I really did. The things I did out there, I thought I was just evil and no good. And they taught me this is a disease. When I was up there, I was roommate with this guy who he was a cop and lost his job, and I mean, he lost his family. And he's the first person I really opened up to, because, I mean, on the streets, I didn't open up to anyone. You know, I'm a quiet person, and all of a sudden I started opening up to this man. And it was a Saturday morning, and his family came up. And he came back to lunch, and was all excited. He said, Mike, if I complete this program and get my life together, my wife and kids are going to come back into my life. I said, wow, beautiful. And he never showed up for dinner that night. He ended up hanging himself. And I said, wow, look at this. The first person I ever let in my life kills himself. And you know, that next morning, my counselor, unbelievable man, grabbed me and took me on his side. He said, Mike, you're going to die. You know, that morning, I didn't pray to die. I looked in this man's eyes, and I said, how don't I die? He said, get involved in this program. He said, sit up front, raise your hand. I said, I don't know how to raise my hand. I don't know how to talk without alcohol in me. I'm not someone who's a good speaker. I don't know how to talk. And he said, Mike, tell them that. And that's exactly what I did. I was going back to the Lower East Side to work, and I did a lot of crazy things in the Lower East Side. And I remember telling this man, I got a bright idea. I'm going to quit my job. And he said to me, Mike, you have no education. You have an excellent job. I said, but how do you get sober in the Lower East Side of Manhattan? He said to me, Mike, us as alcoholics, we'll find a way to get drunk in the Sahara Desert doing something funky with sand. You know, he said, if you want to get sober in the Lower East Side of Manhattan, you can get sober if you want this bad enough. And you know what? I wanted this stuff bad enough. You know, I came out and I jumped into this. And I was with a woman before I went into rehab, and I said, I'm going to break off with it. He said, Mike, no major decisions in the first year. Stay with that woman and see what happens. And, you know, they told me, words always intimidated me. As a little kid, I got one of those labels, I guess. I hear a lot of labels today when you don't read well. I'm sure I had a lot. I still got a lot of them labels, man, but I didn't know it. And my mind just short-circuited. That's all right. You know, but, words and books, and as a kid, they intimidated me. And I remember this guy used to drill in my head, you got to get a sponsor, got to get a sponsor. That word was like authority to me. It scared the hell out of me. It really, really scared me. And I knew I had to get one of these things. So I came out and I joined the Oakland Gardens group in Queens, and I looked around. And there was this man who had something. You know, he had a glow in his eyes, and I never seen it on a street corner, never seen it in a bar. And I remember going up to this man, shaking and sweating, and, will you be my sponsor? And put his hand on my shoulder, he said, Mike, I'll be your friend. I said, wow, that's pretty cool. And he said, but me as a friend, and I said to him, I want what you have. He said, oh yeah, this is what I do every morning. I get up early every morning, I read something, pray, and I get quiet. So I don't need that. There's got to be an easier way. But, he said, this whole God thing, man, I'm an evil person, no good. And he said, Mike, do you believe that I believe? I said, absolutely. He said, my God will take care of both of us until you can find your own that works. And I could digest that. You know, this man spoke to me words I could digest, man. And, you know, he said, Mike, I'd like you to go home and read just two pages of the big book every night. I said, George, you see the size of that book, man? That's a big, big book. And he said, Mike, forget about reading. Don't worry about reading. And the bottom line is this man took me through that book without me even knowing it. You know, and just an amazing, amazing man. He didn't tell me what to do. He invited me into his spiritual life. He'd invite me over to his apartment, and I said, George, I'm a thief, I'm no good, I'm all these different things, I can't come into your home. He said, Mike, yes you can. He used to invite me into his home, take me to different places, and, you know, I ended up getting married. And my father, who I were on two different sides of the Lord growing up, he was my best man at my wedding. Man, that's the gift of these programs. You know, I worked these steps. I made the amends that they talk about. And my father became my best friend in recovery. And I ended up getting married. We lived in this little tiny studio apartment in Queens, me and my wife, and we went camping. And this witch was out to ruin my camping vacation, man, because I'm self-centered in my head, and Every morning she's waking up sick. I says, she's just trying to ruin us. She knows how much I like Cam, but she's doing this on purpose. And, you know, we get home and she goes for a test. She finds out she's pregnant. I said, oh, man. And she goes for another test and she finds out. She comes home, she's hysterical crying. So I figured they found some type of disfigurement or something. I was like, oh, man. She said, it was more than one. I said, well, and she said, there's more than two. So, you know, it's wild, man. It's pretty wild. Life is pretty wild, you know. And my wife gave birth to triplet daughters, and it was amazing. I was involved in this youth program at the time, and there was this woman there who said, Mike, I know you have a hard time asking for help, so I'm giving it to you. She got all these different people to come together and come over to this little tiny basement apartment to help me feed the kids, change them, all different times. And you know, I can't afford to pay these people. She said, Mike, look at their eyes when they come in your door. They wouldn't even say hello to me. They'd run right to my kid. You know, it would be, just the blessings of these rooms. You know, and I was working a real hard program, and I remember one time my sponsor called me, and it was in the middle of a bad scene. My wife worked days, and I worked nights, and kids all went to the bathroom at the same time. My sponsor calls, and I'm ranting and raving about these crappy diapers, man. And, you know, he says to me, it's a man who never had kids, but he had a connection with a God that was unbelievable. And he said to me, Mike, you ain't changing a crappy diaper, man. You're making your daughter feel comfortable. All of a sudden, the smell went away, and it was just amazing. You know, that's what this whole program gives us, you know, to see things differently. You know, where I just see negative and darkness, all of a sudden I got somebody showing me the light. And, you know, life was good. Life was good. You know, and life was beautiful. I had these kids, I worked, family was good, sponsor moved away, ended up passing away. And, all of a sudden life was too good. I started sleeping extra. I wasn't praying in the morning. I wasn't working with other people. And I was going to a lot of meetings. I was going to a lot of beginners meetings. And meetings that focus on a problem. And at the time, the problem was the wife, the kids, everyone else but me. You know, and one of my daughters, she was 15 years old. She tried taking her own life. And I had no God to run to. I had no sponsor to run to. I needed to run, man. I knew drug and alcohol wouldn't work, but I needed to run. I was scared to death, and I ran. I jumped on my bike. I ran with a guy who was real active. We took a bike ride out to South Dakota, went to this little town called Sturgis, and I stayed in this house that was, I was insane, you know, and but I wasn't drinking. I wasn't drinking, but I was running, man. I was running, and nothing looked right. You know, it was like when I was running from other things. You know, as long as I was on the bike with the noise and the motorcycle, I was okay, but I knew in the back of my head I had to stop, and then the noise would catch up to me. I'm running from my daughter who needs me. I didn't know what to do for this kid, you know, and we pull into this little town, and they said, Mike, we're going in for a beer. I said, I'm going to sit here and have a cup of coffee. I'm sitting there having a cup of coffee. My buddy walks up and taps me on the shoulder. He said, Mike, down the road about 15 miles, I seen this big sign, Friends of Bill W's Welcome. I said, I'll see you later, man. I'm going to go see what that's all about. I jumped on my bike. I went and I found this place. Went into this little farm, and I just felt the peace come over me. I didn't have it in a long time. I get off the bike. These people come over and just start talking to me, hugging me, welcoming me, and one guy comes over, we just hit it off, man. We just start talking, and I start telling him about my daughter. And he was telling me about his daughter who was going through a real bad heroin addiction. And he said, Mike, let's pray for our kids. And I'm looking around, who's going to see me pray? You know, I didn't want nobody to say, here's a place I'm 1,500 miles away from anyone I know. I'm worried about who's going to watch me pray. You know, it's insane in my head. But, you know, I prayed, and you know, emergency at home came up. My daughter was back in another hospital. Jumped on my bike and I ran back home, and I was just empty inside. I went to a meeting and I was talking about the problems I got. And this guy got right in my face. He said, "Mike, you better get back to the solutionist program, or you're going to end up killing yourself or somebody else." And I didn't know what he meant. And he turned me on to this big book meeting every Saturday morning. And they start the whole meeting off with, you know, leave your problems at the door. We really believe what we read here today is going to help you solve all your problems. I just thought, how's that going to be, man? But I showed up anyway, and stuff started happening in my life, you know. Unbelievable stuff started happening in my life. And, you know, I just started showing up for my kids, you know. My daughter was in another a hospital uptown here, and two of my buddies called me up and said, "Mike, we're going to go up and see your daughter." I was embarrassed she was in there. He said, "Mike, we're going to go there anyway." And we jumped on a bike, we took a ride uptown to see my daughter walking through this hall, and she sees us coming. She starts hysterical crying. My heart was breaking, man. We go in there, we sit down, and my buddy starts messing with her. Hey, he starts saying, "Amy, you don't ever have to be in a place like this again." He says, "I've been in places like this since I was a little kid, man. You don't ever have to be in a place like this." And, you know, I don't know what happened that day. She's never had to be in a hospital again. Never had to take medication again. She lost 2 years of high school through all this stuff. She wanted to graduate with her sisters. And this one, everyone else said, "No way, she can't do it." And this one woman says, "I believe this kid could do it, man. What does she need to do it?" She ended up going to extra help, night courses. This kid graduated with her sisters, man. It's unbelievable. And you know, right after that, I called my buddy, the guy I met once. I met him that one day, prayed with him. He lived in Arizona. Life was good. I was back into the solution of the program. You know, things were good, man. So I wanted to take a road trip. I called this dude up. Fished his number out of my pocket, all crumbling. I called him up and I said, "I don't know if you remember me." He said, "Absolutely, Mike from New York." He said, "How's your daughter doing?" I said, "She's doing unbelievable." I said, "How's your daughter doing?" She said, "Mike, she's cleaned a year and a half." He said, "When you coming?" I said, "I'm on my way. I'm in Oklahoma." You know, I went out with this guy. I met him in his home, and he opened his heart and his home to me. You know, it's unbelievable the things that go on here, the friendships we make. You know, I've met the guy once, now I see him every year. This year, my wife's not a big rider, but she lets me do my thing every year. And this year, she flew out to South Dakota. She wanted to meet these people I stay with on this farm every week, every year. And she ended up flying out to South Dakota and meeting us. And, you know, we did the whole... you know, life is good, man. But you know what? It started coming in here, a broken man. You know, a lot of people call me, I got a little nickname, Magic Mike, because I use that word a lot, man. Because I see people come in here, broken human beings, man. You know, I got a Thursday night meeting I go to, like, at East Rockaway, and it's a step meeting, and there's a lot of good sobriety back there. You know, there's a lot of, I don't know if I'll ever have that unconditional belief that no matter what happens, God's going to take care of this. My whole concept of God changes. You know, not too long ago, someone was telling me this story about each one of us got two wolves inside of us, a good wolf and an evil wolf. Which one wins? The one I feed. And I can visualize that. A lot of this God stuff, I get lost. You know, I get lost in it. But that goodness in darkness, I could grasp, man. You know, I know what works today. I know if I hit my knees every morning, I read my books, and I try and get quiet, I know that Belt Parkway doesn't look so congested and crazy. When I hit my jump out of bed and get into the day without doing that stuff, everyone's a fool, man. I'm cutting off everybody, and, you know, it's just, I don't have to believe this stuff works. I don't have to believe none of this stuff works. But if I do what they do, I get the benefits. You know, I don't know if this suit works. But you know what? I had a man who I used to visit quite often in an intensive care unit in South Jamaica. He came out of that place. He jumped into recovery, man. And he came to this group. And I asked him to speak of my one of my anniversaries, and he said, Mike, there's only one problem. I said, what's the problem? He said, I got to wear a suit. My group tells me I got to wear a suit. And I said, I don't care if you come naked. I really don't. I just want you to be part of my recovery for that night. And this man came in the suit, and he looked good, man. He stood up here proud. And I said, if I do what you people tell me, I don't have to believe it. I go back to this little meeting, and I do what these men say. You know, I got these guys coming up to me telling me stuff like, Mike, I seen roses down the block for $9.99. On the way home, pick up a dozen for your wife. It ain't her damn birthday or nothing. I just don't think right. I really don't. My head just ain't right. But you know, if I do what these guys tell me to do, I went down there, bought these $9.99 roses, went home. It's like I gave my wife $1 million, man. She's crying and all that other stuff. And it's just, because I don't know a whole lot. I really don't. And I come in here and you people teach me, man. You people teach me. You people teach me it's not crappy diapers. It's making my daughter feel good. You know, just a simple thing in life. It aren't so simple up here, man. I can confuse the hell out of a bologna sandwich. I really can, man. And, but my life today is, it's way beyond my wildest dreams, man. It really is. And if you're sitting in here and you're new, grab onto somebody. You deserve the benefits of these rooms. When I was in my darkest looking to run, I told my wife, I don't love you. I never loved you. I'm out of here. You know, this woman had a program called Al-Anon, and she held on to me, man. She held on to me, and she loved me. She stayed with me. She said, give it a chance. And I worked this program like I never worked nothing before, and today we have a marriage that's unbelievable, man. It's unbelievable. You know, it's, I don't know. I don't know the words. You know, I don't know. How do you describe to somebody the smell of a rose, man? I don't know. You know, if you're a good writer, a good talker, you may get it, but I don't know. How do you describe to somebody the benefits of working these programs, man? I don't know. But I see it. I see people coming here busted up. All of a sudden they get a little glow in their eye, you know, and walking a little taller. And it blows me away, man. There goes that magic again. There's something here. There's something in this room. Man, I was nervous as heck. I'm still sweating. But you know, it's all right, man. It's cool. It is cool. I've learned, I had a buddy of mine who just passed away a year ago. And, you know, he had an unbelievable man, taught me a lot, taught me how to live. And, you know, he was bedridden with his sickness. And, you know, my head was saying, what do I say to a sick man? I can't go near it. What do I say to a guy who knows he's going to die, who had so much life in him and just dying? And a friend of mine called me up and said, Mike, Bill's wife's not letting anyone come over. I said, okay, I'm going to go over there now. This way I can sit and say, you know what, at least I tried. You know, I tried. And, you know, I went over to this guy's house and his wife seen me. And she said, Bill would love to see you. Get upstairs, man. And I was able to spend the last 2 weeks with this man. But my head just talks to me. What do you got to say? How can you can't help nobody. You know, dude, look at all that noise, man. But when I come here and I talk to people, I don't know, that noise, that clutter quiets down. It's like with the alcohol, man, but the alcohol is a whole different story. You know, but I come here and I get in touch with the God of my understanding. I feed that good wolf by hitting my knees, showing up when I don't want to show up, and doing the next right thing. Man, unbelievable things happen. The friendships I got, man, it's... There's no words for it, you know. No words. And it's a beautiful group. It's a powerful group. I've seen results from people who came out of this group. And am I just short circuit that I can't see? 5 minutes left. But, you know, recently I went... I try and bring the message wherever I can. I recently brought it to a rehab, and this guy was defending atheism, saying, Mike, this whole God thing is... I said, you know, you don't have to believe nothing, man. believe that I believe. And as I'm leaving, he said, Mark, can you do me a favor? Bring me a big book. I said, absolutely. I'll have you a big book in a couple of days. And he said, can you bring me cigarettes? I said, no, I ain't bringing you cigarettes. I'll bring you a big book. I believe in a big book, but I ain't bringing you cigarettes. And, you know, I was supposed to bring it one day. I never got there. And I remember, I said, let me bring this big book. I go to the door, and I ask the lady at the door, is Tito here? She said, there's no Tito here. I said, I just spoke to him the other night. There's got to be a Tito here. She goes in, she says, oh, it's his nickname. Yeah, I'll give it to him. You can't come in. I said, oh, no problem. I just left it at that. That night I get a call from him. He's all jammed up. And he said, Mike, you know, you left here, and I started doing some things you were talking about. Then this woman came in, this nun came in, and she started singing these Christmas carols. Something happened to me. I went back in my room, and because I started crying. I went back in my room, and I hit my knees, because that's what you were telling me you'd do. I'm sitting there, I didn't know what I was praying to, but I was doing it anyway. Next thing I know, I get a knock at the door. Are you Tito? He said, yeah, I'm Tito. And someone just left this book for you. And it's just, you know, a little coincidence. He called me up all excited, man. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I said, you don't have to know what's going on. Just keep doing that next thing, man. If you see a light in somebody's eyes, that's what they do on a daily basis, man. Ask them to take you through these 12 steps of recovery. It's that simple. Ain't no rocket stuff. If I could get it, you know, that someone who was intimidated my whole life by books and words, if you sounded good, let's go outside, man. Let's settle this the real way. You know, I just didn't. Words always intimidated me. They really did. And, but, you know, I don't need to get intimidated today. You know, the thought of a suit scared me. Scared me, but I don't know if I'm comfortable in it, but I showed up in it, you know. My wife came and we made this whole big fight. She said, what are you doing with them damn pockets? I said, I don't know. Joe told me to do that. You know, I don't know, man, but I just keep doing the next right thing, you know. I trust people today. You know, I never trust. I had stuff I was going to the grave with. Man. I'm a free man today. My pop, when he was on his deathbed, I called my sponsor up. He said, Mike, do you have anything to say to that man? I said, no. He said, tell him it's okay to go home. I was able to go to my pop and tell him it's okay to go home. And the wild thing is a buddy of mine went through a similar situation just last month. Called me up and I said, do you have anything to tell your mom? That next morning, he called me up and said, Mike, I did what you told me to do. I had forgot what I told him to do the next night. My brain cells ain't all there, but they come out when they need to come out. You know, my sponsor, I used to tell him, how can I ever sponsor somebody? You know, I'm a quiet person. I'm not good with words. He said, Mike, if God wants you to speak, he'll make you speak. If he wants you to be quiet and listen, he'll make you be quiet and listen. And I see that, man. I had my daughter from back in New Paltz sit down with me the other night telling me all this stuff about a project she's got. I looked at her, I said, Melissa, I don't know what, I'm not a good college person, I'm not a good school person. I don't know what to tell you, I want to help you. She said, Dad, I don't need help, I just want you to listen. So I can do that, man, I'm pretty good at that. Man. It's wild. You know, this stuff, my kids are going to be 20 this month, you know, and I got an unbelievable relationship with them, you know, because of people in these rooms, you know, I made a lot of mistakes. I wanted to tear up boyfriends and kill people, and, you know, it's just, I've come in here and I held behind what you don't know what it's like bringing up three girls, man. You know, and, people have told me, Mike, do you think you could look at it this way? I won't admit it right then and there. I go home and I get quiet. Yeah, man, I made a big mistake. And I'm able to tell my kids. And I'm not able to tell the boyfriend, look, I made him, and they don't know what you did. They think I'm nuts. Here I'm going to kill him. And next minute, I'm ready to, I'm making amends, you know. It's a wild ride, you know. So if you're here, you don't know how this works, man. Get with that sponsorship, you know. Believe that I believe, you know. The results will come. That's all you need to do, you know. I want to thank the Atlantic Group for having me, and thanks a lot.